Is tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Mike H.
I'm Mike and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for having me. I was here 5 years ago almost in September of 2011. For the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have not had a drink since August 25th, 1989. And that's a miracle. I was born and raised in Fresno, California. Good middle class family, good church, good school, good friends, good coaches. I had no reason to become an alcoholic. Except I do suffer from the obsession and the physical allergy. I had alcoholism in both sides of my families. I've learned that lots of people do. When I was in early junior high, some of my friends, this is the late 1970s, some of my friends were starting to experiment with cigarettes, pot, and alcohol. And I was curious. And the first time I got a little tipsy, sneaking stuff out of my parents' liquor cabinet, I went out to the park where someone in this room used to hang out. And I tried to show off my basketball skills. Now I was probably about 5'1 at the time, so. And I broke my left wrist. And I was 5 years sober before I realized that the only time I've ever been in a cast is because of alcohol. So I had to do JV baseball tryouts with my mitt over a cast. And I wasn't going to be a great prospect to begin with, so that made it certain I didn't make the team. But a couple weeks after that, my mom and my sister and brother were at appointments and school, and my dad was at work, and I snuck more alcohol from their cabinet, wine, liquor, cigarettes, chewing tobacco, and I camped out in the backyard on a Friday afternoon, and I drank as much as I could and smoked as much as I could. And I realized that I got the effect that I saw my friends at school experiencing. I felt like I could literally walk on air. That was until I blacked out, of course. The rest, I'm told, I ended up on the front lawn with vomit all over me. My bedroom was full of vomit. My brother had to pull my mattress out onto the back patio and spray it down. I was sick as a dog. I was grounded. I was deathly ill. I used to have very bad hangovers. But that next Saturday morning, I was thinking, I'm going to do this again. So for me, I was an alcoholic from the very beginning. Now that's different for some of us. I spent my first 14, 15 years of sobriety in the military, so I had several sponsors from all over the country and the world. And I know of sponsors and people that were social drinkers for a long time. They raised families, they served out careers, they sent kids off to college. And then they became alcoholics. So it's different for the details are different for us, but the end result is the same. So I started to hang out with my friends in high school, and we did walk parties. We had people pimp beer for us at liquor stores in Fresno. We told our parents we were going to the movies. I don't think they ever believed us. But I felt that alcohol made me feel part of. It made me help fit in. You know, Bill describes in his story in the Big Book about I was part of life at last. So that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to feel, I wanted to fit in. And I thought alcohol would help me do that. And for a while it did. But already in early in high school, I started to have side effects when I was sober. I was more anxious. I was depressed. Mood swings. So my parents worried about me and sent me to some help. And And of course, I never was honest with them about how I drank, because once I got that first real drunk, I spent the rest of the subsequent 9 years fantasizing about getting drunk again and trying out other substances. Fortunately, I didn't have too much access to that, and they weren't as available as they are now. But the few times I did, I was able to drink more and recover quicker from a hangover. So somehow I made it through high school, and I got to college. I went away to Southern California for school. And in college, I worked hard, but I drank a lot, and I still had mood swings when I wasn't drinking. I never connected to alcohol. I joined a fraternity. I got in trouble a few times. I didn't really see the connection with alcohol. Somehow I made it off to a training program back east in the Navy, where they expected me to suit up and show up and be an adult. I believe that alcoholics, when we start drinking alcoholically, we stop growing mentally and spiritually and emotionally. And I was already aware of being not like other people. But that part of me that wanted to... The big book talks about a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Part of me wanted to be... to impress the people I looked up with, my coaches, my teachers, my aunts, my uncles, my parents, my friends. And then another part of me wanted to drink as much as I could and do whatever the hell I wanted to and be a badass. And fortunately for me and other people, I failed miserably. I got to the point where I would black out, I would vomit, I would wake up in the shower. And I got the questions from my roommates and friends, why do you drink like this? What's going on? Those are questions that most alcoholics are on the receiving end of. I would swear to myself I can never do this again. I do remember reaching out to one of my best friend's fathers who I knew was in the program and talking to him. Of course, I was still drunk talking to him. He made some suggestions which the Navy forced me to take up a year later. But I drank to get drunk. It says in the big book, men and women drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. I remember in high school I would have my friends over for parties when my parents went out of town, and I would hoard as much alcohol into an ice chest in my back bedroom as possible because I wanted the effect produced by alcohol. And that's what I think comes from the physical allergy, is that once I put the alcohol inside me, the only thing I can think of is the next drink. And it doesn't matter what's going to happen. They talk about the insane idea, the desperate experience of the first drink, where I want to intoxicate myself. And they tell us that our sickness is caused by selfishness. You know, self-centered instincts gone astray. And what is more selfish than someone wanting to intoxicate themselves? And I remember I would say, I'm only hurting myself, so I'm not hurting anybody else. But once we start taking steps in these rooms, we start to realize the effect we have on some other people. Fortunately, I had a sponsor that was able to demonstrate that to me, so I got a little bit of an awakening, because if I don't realize that my life and my actions and my words affect other people, I'm going to end up going back out to drink again. I'm going to have to go out to drink again. So I kept getting more and more depressed, and I got to the point where I couldn't get drunk anymore. I would drink larger and larger amounts. I would go in the hot summer of the East Coast, hot and humid, and when I was supposed to be working and getting prepared for work and school, I'd get a bottle of 151, and I'd dilute it with that gallon punch lemonade that you buy at the market, because I couldn't get it down straight. And I would drink and I would black out and I would wake up and I wouldn't have a buzz. I would just be hungover and depressed. And I would go through that routine and I would look forward to days when I had them off in a row so I could drink more. And I had friends and dates and girlfriends and I said stupid things and I lost them. And I never made the connection to alcohol. I thought if I could... By then I had started seeing a counselor, a shrink at the where I was stationed back in Bethesda, Maryland. Of course, I never explained to them. I thought I had emotional problems. I was depressed. If I could just get a handle on that, then I could control and enjoy my drinking. And that's, you know, that's the illusion. And that book talks a lot about illusion and delusion. And that's not reality, but for an alcoholic, that's our way of life. That's the only world I know is, you know. And I thought I had to have alcohol to have fun anywhere. Now near the end, it stops becoming fun, but the alcoholic doesn't realize it. I couldn't see it. I would have that determination to not drink again. And then some switch would flip in my head. They talked, what is it, a mental twist they talk about? Where I would just say, F it, I'm going to get drunk again. And that proves to me that that part of my mind is totally insane. They talk about when the thought of a drink, the first drink, pops into my mind and it goes up against every reason to not drink. The thought of the drink is going to win no matter what. It doesn't matter whether I'm on my last DUI or I'll go to jail or I'll get fired or I'll end up in the hospital again. If I'm an alcoholic, the alcohol insane idea always wins, minus a spiritual solution. So I got to the point where I was hungover one day and I was walking around in Maryland near Washington, D.C., where I was stationed. And I wandered to it was a Wednesday night probably, and I just got off the phone with a family member complaining about how poor me and what problems I had and how God was ungrateful. God was persecuting me. That my aunt said, you have so much to be grateful for, and I screamed to her, everything I got on my own. That's how arrogant and self-centered I was. And I've learned that that's part of the condition of alcoholism. So I went in my little depressed mood, and I walked to the rectory of a Catholic church near a parochial school where I lived. And I knocked on the rectory, it was like 7 at night, and I'm thinking the nuns in there are thinking, what the hell is this dude doing out here? And I remember thinking, God doesn't care about me anymore. They didn't answer the door. So in my little depressed pity party, I moseyed on home and went back to drinking. But obviously somebody heard something, because 3 weeks later I was locked up on a Navy psych ward on the way to alcohol rehab. So I am convinced that the God of my understanding answers prayers, but He answers them in His time, not mine. And as what I've learned in this program and it says in that book is that we don't know what's best for us. You know, in God's hands, miracles will happen. And the miracles start in these rooms. And they locked me up on a Navy psych ward because they didn't want me to drink on the way out to treatment. And they sent me out to a hospital in Long Beach, which is now closed, where I've had several sponsors go. And 6 weeks, and they took us to AA meetings every night, and sometimes at noon. And they had H&I members of AA come and read the big book in the 12x12 to us. And I started to listen, and I remember in the meetings I looked at the day room there on the third, it was the sixth floor of the alcohol rehab unit. I looked at the 12 steps, and I saw step 2, and I saw a power greater than ourselves. And then I looked at step 3, and it said, God as we understood Him. And I wasn't scared. I'd never been an atheist. I'm too chicken to become an atheist. But I, I'm like Bill describes in step two, I'm the person who had faith and lost it. You know, I was defiant, I was obstinate. He talks about that in We Agnostics too. But I didn't feel threatened. I said, you know, I can work with this. And we held hands after a meeting and we said the Lord's Prayer, and I'd done that since I was in first grade. So I wasn't scared, and I little by little became, I don't remember much from the meetings in treatment. They took us by vans. There were guys that would drive the van to the meetings and take us all there from the rehab place out in town, and they would go out and they'd go drink or mess around and they'd come back. And so, you know, we're sick people. A lot of the people I went to rehab with didn't make it. They warned us in meetings, the speaker meetings like these rooms here, that if when you get out of treatment, you don't get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous up to your neck, get a home group, get a sponsor, work the steps, you're going to have to go back out and drink. And I got out of treatment, and I was scared enough of myself and my habits. I had an old-timer tell me early in sobriety, an alcoholic is someone with a lot of bad habits, extremely well-learned. Mental habits, emotional habits, spiritual habits, physical habits. And I was terrified enough of myself, because I knew that the way I am is, I'll get out of treatment and I'll go to a meeting 7 days a week for the first couple weeks. Then it'll be every other day. Then it'll be once a week. Then it'll be once a month. And I was terrified enough by what I heard in these rooms that I would end up drunk. And the Navy has a way of scaring you. When they lock you up in a facility, whether it's a psych ward or jail, they have total control. So I was scared enough of them that I did not want to go back to a place like that. Wearing green foam slippers and light blue pajamas and being escorted to the bathroom and not being able to have my razor blade to shave in the morning unless they signed it out to me. That's where alcoholics end up. We end up in hospitals, institutions, and morgues. So I got out. I started going to meetings. That was the only consistent thing I'd ever done in my life other than drink, was I started going to AA meetings. I got a temporary sponsor. I eventually got a regular sponsor. I went to some stag meetings. I started making coffee. And then my pink cloud started wearing off. And that's when they said, well, we have a thing called a big book, and there's steps that we have to do here. And my first attempt at the steps was okay. I did the best I could. My sponsor did the best he could with me. I was so convinced I was different that I didn't trust him to take my fifth step with him. So I went to a priest who'd been sober 30 years, and that was a good start. And then I got stationed out in San Diego, and I started to run up against my character defects. And they say somewhere in step four that my alcoholism is caused by my character defects, which are instincts gone astray, caused by selfishness, self-delusion. And unless I work hard at the removal of those defects with using the steps, I'm going to end up having to go back to alcohol because I won't know any other way. And I started to realize that, because all I was left with now was my defects. And that's when I started driving this man crazy after meetings, flagging him down and talking to him in the parking lot. And he eventually said, I now have time for you. I'm done with another guy. Bring the big book of 12x12 and a dictionary to my house. And we took the third step together, and he had me look words up. I thought I was so smart. I found out I wasn't that smart despite all the education I'd had. It leveled my pride enough to listen to him. And he showed me how to write a list of resentments. And I went back and I made a first attempt, and he said, this isn't going to cut it. It's not thorough enough. He sent me back to the desk many times. Finally, we did it, and we did the fifth step, and he taught me about step six and seven. and being willingness over and over again to have those defects removed. I had an experience at work right after that, back in San Diego, where I was caught lying. And I thought I had been such an honest guy. And my sponsor said, no, you haven't. But you're willing. Don't drink. Keep going to meetings and call me tomorrow. But those were the lessons I continue to learn in sobriety, and I had to become more willing to have those defects removed. And then from that list of resentments, which was very long, he showed me how to develop a list of people I needed to make amends to. And the amends I thought I needed to make were not the ones I needed to make, because I had to talk to him about those. Because I'm a selfish person. I want to people please. I want to manipulate you. I want to con you. The amends he suggested I make to women I knew was leave them alone. Don't ever call them again. And there were people and amends and financial amends I thought that I didn't have to make. He said, no, you have to make that amend. There was a guy in high school at a New Year's Eve party. I was jealous of him because he had dated a girl that I liked that I didn't have the guts to ask out. And I said something to my friend about what he said about my friend's sister, and my friend almost broke this guy's jaw. I had to find this guy in L.A. in Orange County and apologize to him. And I did it, and my sponsor taught me how to do those things. And then he gave me some books to start researching Step 11, some outside reading, Sermon on the Mount, new pair of glasses, other things, other AA literature. And over the years, I've read through that stuff, and because it's an ongoing experience. And many times I've had to use Step 10 to make amends to people I've hurt in sobriety. And my sponsors at the time said, you just clean up your side of the street and leave the rest to God. And the results were very good. And that's why we have a program. And, you know, the longer I'm here, the more I realize it's a complete God program. All those steps have to involve God. You know, the first step, I don't have the power to remove the obsession for alcohol or anything mind-altering. The second step, I don't have the power to restore my own sanity. You know, the third step, I don't have the power to remove my own selfishness. I don't have the power to remove my fears. I don't have the power to remove my defects. I don't have the willingness to be ready to have them removed. I don't have the power to make people accept my amends. I just have to do the best I can. And I've never taken any leaves of absence from Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't recommend it. When I was in college, we had a fraternity, and there were active members and inactive members. My opinion is that inactive members in AA are drunk members. There's no room for inactivity here. I have to stay active. I have to stay involved in service. I've been in H&I pretty much since the beginning. I've tried to be at service at the group level, secretary, H&I rep, coffee maker, treasurer. I have to do that because, you know, the way I see it, my experience is I don't see any decrease in the amount of alcoholism out there. Alcoholism is as common now as it was when I got here almost 27 years ago. And it's a terminal disease. It'll destroy the alcoholic's mind, body, and soul. And it'll leave a lot of collateral damage to loved ones around them. And most of us pretty much drive away everything, all loved ones. And I've been able to do things in sobriety that I never thought I could do. I was able to finish my training program and have a successful stint in the Navy and get an honorable discharge and travel all over the world. There are English-speaking AA meetings in every major city on this planet. And all I had to do was make a little bit of an effort. Sometimes it involved getting a train and making stops and transfers in Japan to get to a meeting. But I did it. When I reach out, hold out my hand, God meets me more than halfway. People came to pick me up. People showed up and showed up when I didn't expect them to. And I stayed sober, and I had a good experience, and I've learned to not only stay sober, but get out and live life. And I've had things happen in life, like get fired, get dumped, have her run out with him, lose family members, lose pets. But I'm involved in life now. I'm not hiding in a bottle. And I've been able to do some other things and go through some health problems, and now I'm going through a health problem now that is probably going to be with me for the rest of my life. But one of my first sponsors said that there's nothing that can happen to us in sobriety that a drink isn't going to make worse. And that I need to keep adding things to that list of things I won't drink over. Because he taught me early on, some young lady was not very responsive to my phone calls. So I called, I was 2 years sober, and I called whining to him, and he said, and I remember making the threat to him that, well, if this I don't get my way, I may as well get drunk. And he said, dangerous, real dangerous. And it says, job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking until we trust God and clean house. I have to be willing to go without, no matter what, and stay sober no matter what happens to me, no matter what happens in life. And he said, if I didn't have that willingness, I could pray for it. And I still pray for it, because life doesn't get any easier sometimes. It gets better, but I've been through a lot, and I've never had to drink over it. And I have some self-respect, and I have some peace of mind and some serenity, because before I got here, I was a guy who felt I was not where I was supposed to be. I wasn't who I was supposed to be. I wasn't who I was supposed to be with. I always felt out of place. And he taught me that if I do those steps to the best of my abilities and try to practice these principles as a way of life, I won't have to drink no matter what. And there will be times when I know I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to do. And I'll have any. And he says, you know what that's going to be called? Serenity. And I don't have it all the time, but I have it more than I used to. You know, and I don't have to convince sponsors now that the universe is made by God to make me miserable. That there's a cosmic conspiracy that God is out to get me and make me drink. You know, I used to actually try to convince my sponsors of that in sobriety. I don't really have that feeling anymore, and that in itself is a miracle. You know, things happen in life that we don't expect, and they told me early on in sobriety that don't leave before the miracle happens. That a lot of times the things we think we want for ourselves, we'll sell ourselves short. We'll sell ourselves short. And that is the case in my life. And I'm looking forward to the next step, and I'm not sure what's going to happen, and I have a lot of fear about with this chronic illness that I might have. But I've learned, I've walked through things before, and I've watched people in these rooms go through things that were really tough, and they didn't drink over it. I had one late sponsor lose his son to a drunk driving accident on Christmas Eve, and he did not drink, and he stayed sober till the day he died, till he passed. And my current sponsor lost one of his sons from a prior marriage to an overdose in San Diego, and he did not drink. And those are the examples I see of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we learn here with these principles that I have to learn, take these things that I learn in these rooms and practice them out in the real world. Because I had a conversation with a friend of mine about a year ago. And she taught me what not to do. When I'm using my alcoholism or even Alcoholics Anonymous as an excuse to not meet life's responsibilities outside these rooms, I'm not making a good example out of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm grateful my sponsors taught me that I have to practice these principles in all my affairs, at work, at home, because that's the example of a spiritual solution to this insanity of alcoholism. And I have to, it's a program based on rigorous honesty. when it says in how it works, something where people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with ourselves, you know, that's describing a sociopath. Someone that cannot be honest, that cannot have a conscience. And when I drank, that's the way I behaved. And when my sponsor showed me that I was not a victim after I wrote those things out on a list, I remember I had to do an inventory, and I thought all these women in the past that I had dated had screwed me over. And when I wrote it out on a list, I realized they were pretty patient with me. I was lucky just to get to go out with them. So when we put things on paper, as they suggested, it changes things. And I developed a conscience, and I could see how my actions and inactions harmed other people. And then they doubled back and hurt me more. And I felt guilty and angry, and I went back out and I drank. And I don't have to do that today. So if you're new, as they say, keep coming back. I say that on birthday cards, and never stop. Don't go away from these moods. Don't drift away from these rooms, because the disease of alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And that thought, without the help of God and fellow alcoholics in our fellowship, I'm going to get to the point where I'll have to take a drink, and that there will be no defense against that drink. And I don't want to do that. So thanks for letting me share.